little about my mother before I was born.
Today, Carolyn, it is March the 5th, the year 2018. And we are here with you, Carolyn Rikers, from the Rock Valley Manor in Medford, Oregon. Carolyn, may we interview you?
Yes, of course.
Okay. And sent this tape to StoryCorps website in Washington, D.C. so your children and grandchildren can listen to this.
Do I answer to this?
Yes. Do you like that?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Good.
Judy Saunders is with us. And my name is Sophia Mulder.
What is your last name?
Mulder. M-U-L-D-E-R.
Mulder.
M-O-L-N-E-R.
Mulder. Never heard it.
No. You mentioned when we were talking that your grandmother was born in Oregon. Tell us all about that.
Well, my grandmother was Annie Lowe Walcott. And Walcott is an old English name. And but that's who she married. She was Annie Lowe when she was born. I do not know the year. I will have to look it up. But it was a southern part of Oregon along the, I'm trying to think of the river, along a little river in southern Oregon, by Roseburg, by Coquel, or Coquille, as they called it, Reedsport, all those little towns along the Coquel, or Coquille River. How they know she was the first girl born in Southern Oregon Territory, I do not know, but it's recorded. And Annie Lowe had two brothers. The Lowes, the Lowe family, had come around instead of across the country like the Pilgrims. They had come around the Cape of the Horn of Good Hope. I don't even know the name of the
South
Cape,
America.
And I should. And they came around, went up along the California coast. This was, I should get the year, and settled in what is now called Port Orford. And they settled the town, which is has always been famous for myrtle trees. It's the only place, aside from the Holy Land, where myrtle trees grow naturally. And they're beautiful trees, and many wooden products are made from them, and they mostly come from Port Orford, Oregon. I don't know much about her childhood. The fact that she had two brothers is interesting. I don't know. No, I did not meet her family. I met her husband. I wish I could remember if I met her family, if it would be in a picture of a tiny baby. And I do have little pictures when she was celebrated. They had parades in those days. And she was always dressed, I'll have pictures for you. She was always dressed in a hat and finery. And the early cars, usually a Hupmobile, that was all decorated. And Grandma sat in there with her brother and later her husband when they had parades. Celebrated 4th of July and that kind of thing. So that was exciting for me because I just remember as a little kid.
That's beautiful.
When she saw the parade, I don't remember the parades, but I remember them from pictures.
Now, where were you born?
Me?
There, yes.
I was born in Marshfield, Oregon, a little town which is now called Coos Bay. And I was born at Kaiser Hospital. My dad had inherited a grocery store when he was working for the groceryman, and the groceryman died, and my dad was just a late teenager, early 20s, and inherited this grocery store.
Aye.
And in Marshfield, there were only two grocery stores, my dad's grocery store and the Chinese grocery store. And, that's where I was born. I was the second child born to my mother. She lost her first child because of a heart defect, which now, you know, could have been cured, which still makes me sad because the little baby casket was always along when we visited the cemetery. Anyway, I'd like to tell you a little about my mother. She came from a German family, and they settled in Wisconsin. And her dad, for some reason, picked the family up when they were in high school age and moved to Ashland, Oregon. And this, I don't know, when they were in high school, I have the history, her dad was president of the bank, which is now the Shakespearean Festival office.
Nice.
And he owned property, he sold the property. It was a pear orchard that wasn't working, and he sold it to Dr. Swedenborg. And it's now a famous house that the college uses. It's a Swedenborg home. And anyway, she had a brother and a sister. And the interesting part I want you to know is that she also had a lover from Wisconsin, a very lover-loving. And I have old books that he gave her of Christy girls, beautiful. I have her college pictures of these Christy girls. They were the beauty.
Yes.
Beauties of the time.
Uh-huh.
And I have several of the fashion magazines that he gave her. And in them, I find little notes on blue paper from your true lover, Durf. His name was Fred. And it was Fred Schilling. And the Schilling brothers were just discovering Schilling spices when her father moved the family to Ashland. Well, that love affair kept going, and it makes me very sad not to have talked to my mother more, because as a young girl, I know that she went through many things that I wouldn't have loved to have heard about.
Yes.
Anyway, as it transpired, she went to college at the Ashland College, and then Fred came west, and they were married. And this was a great love affair, apparently, from a long time ago when they were younger. And on the way home, I have one picture of them throwing snowballs off of the train on the way back to Wisconsin. And when they arrived home in Wisconsin to settle down, they discovered that Fred had tuberculosis.
Oh, no.
And within a week, he was in the sanitarium. And within 6 months, he died.
Oh, my gosh.
And to this day, I wish I had asked questions and known more. Mm-hmm. Because then my mother came home, back to Ashland, and against her father's wishes, she went to college. He said young girls didn't do things like that. And he took her to Oregon State, where she took up home economics and was teaching men's cookery, when my dad convinced her to marry him because she had lived with his family while teaching in Marshfield, Oregon.
Hi.
Where before they were married, mm-hmm. before she and Fred were married. And my dad finally convinced her to marry him, and just from the experience of living with his family.
Hi.
And so it was a happy marriage, but I often think my mother went in with much sadness.
Yes.
And then to lose her first child, and she was no longer young, and then to have the fortitude to go ahead and have me, and heaven only knows I'm living forever, and wishing her other children could do that. And I had a brother, and so she raised two of us. And my dad worked very hard. I remember the Depression so well, and tried to run a little grocery store in Marshfield. And finally, Safeway came. I was about 11 when Safeway came, and of course that undid the grocery business. But I just wanted you to know that little bit about my mother, because there must have been sad things that she never talked about. So I often think I wish I had talked to her.
I think that's the reason it is so nice that you can tell your story now so your family can listen to what you remember. So I think...
Well, I can picture what she must have gone through and never said anything. Mm-hmm. All the only thing she ever said, and of course the Schilling Spices would have been a whole different scene, but... is that things would have been different.
Yeah.
And that was all.
You never know, right?
No. So that's enough. But my brother and I grew up in a normal. I remember so well everything from when I was really little.
Uh-huh.
We lived in an old house that was old then and still there. And I have such fond memories. It was the Depression. No one had anything. People couldn't pay their grocery bills, of course. And I can remember my dad delivering 3 eggs to people who couldn't afford a whole dozen. And
so he was a good man.
And part of a loaf of bread. And that kind of thing. And he had an old delivery truck that he filled with ice in the back. And I think it was a Ford. And there was a boy, Dwight Wilson. And we called him Dewey. And interestingly enough, I remember him sitting on the ice in the delivery truck. And later, when he grew up to be a lawyer, living in Medford, Oregon.
Oh,
you see, Dewey used to ride in my dad's delivery truck. But interestingly enough, there are 2 Dewey Wilsons, or Dwight Wilsons, in Medford, and I chose the wrong Dwight Wilson to tell that to. And he is still living at the manor, Dwight Wilson.
Yes.
And he's the one that I thought was Dewey, but I did know Dewey later.
Uh-huh.
And so that was just a hearsay.
Beautiful story. Where did you go to school? How was your school? How did you feel about it?
School?
Yes.
School was a little central, Marshfield Central School. It was on a little hill. With wooden floors. I can still see the building. And my brother and I went. It had wooden floors. I say that because the teachers, we had one teacher who taught picture land, state and cities where you are. Picture this being the road past your house, and we'd look on the floors. And picture this, and we would get so you could picture the road, and then another street, and so-and-so lived here and the store there. And that's how she taught, instead of with a lot of books and pictures, I guess.
Yes.
I just remember that.
But you remember all that. So she must have been a very good teacher.
Yes, I would say we all got a message from it, and I still remember it. But then I also remember the day I wet my pants in the first grade. I couldn't hold it any longer. And I can remember, I just wouldn't raise my hand. I knew I should, but I couldn't raise my hand. And I had to stay home for 2 days after that.
Oh.
I still remember. I was real crushed. I won't do it again.
No.
Oh, dear.
So after your grade school at elementary, ready to go?
Well, the grade school, first I have to tell you, and I have this little book someplace. In the second grade, I can see the school, all wood, and it had an upstairs and a downstairs. The rooms were off of the downstairs and some upstairs. And in the second grade, we have a picture of it. The teachers made a maypole, and we... It's all pictured there, and Bob Ferris and I danced. We were partners, and there's a picture of the maypole, and we were friends, and boyfriends and girlfriends until college.
Hi.
And so that went all the way, and we were just good friends. And off and on, you know, how school kids are. And not too long ago, here in Medford, they ended up here, well, first in Sun River. We were both there. And he called me before he died. Just to remember. And I thought, what a good thing to, you know, a nice thing to do. And it brought a lot of memories.
I believe that.
And I was wishing I'd sent him the book, because I still have the book with those pictures and sayings from all the up through high school.
Very nice.
But our school years were so typical. It was a typical small town. One school was on the business side of town, off of Central. And the other school was on the good side of town, and that was on a hill. It's still there. And steps up. It was kind of traditional. We always thought it was a very nice high school. I think there were 90 of us who graduated, which was a lot of kids in a little town.
Was it Marshfield then? Or was it
Marshfield High School, and it still is.
So it didn't change its name?
So, no. And that was... partly business people, my dad included, who got together. This was kind of during the war. And they thought if Marshfield and North Bend, who are together, it's kind of the same town, just a little hill separates them. And if they got together and both voted to name the two towns, Coos Bay, that it would become more well known because it's the largest port between Seattle and San Francisco. Yes. And it carries lumber, seafood, it carries so many things across to Japan and China. But North Bend voted it down, so it's still North Bend. Marshfield voted for it, so it's Coos Bay. But they neglected to put the high school name in the bill. So when Medford plays Marshfield, it's Marshfield High School.
And still. It's
in Coos. And they never changed it to Medford Pirates.
So you did go, after that, you did go to college, university?
I was very fortunate because in those days, it was the end of the Depression, and because of my mother being a teacher, she had saved and saved, because, as I remember, it cost $500 a year to go to college.
Yes.
And that included $35 for room and board, and $35, I can't believe, registration and books and so forth. Anyway, it amounted to $500 a year to go to college in those days. And not a lot of people could go.
No.
And I had, I think four of us went from Marshfield. My boyfriend couldn't go. He had to stay out and work for a year in order to go to college, which a lot of kids did.
Yeah.
And every job we had, I worked in a bakery and and in the dress shop and a few little odd jobs, and I always got $60 a month. So those jobs were all $60 a month. No matter what you did.
So after your graduation, what did you do?
Up to my what?
Graduation.
Oh, graduation. In college?
Yeah, yes.
Well, I disappointed my mother, I'm sure, because I became more interested in what ran the college and what ran the student body and activities than I was in studies, which I don't know was good and was bad,
mm-hmm.
because we became very interested and I was, well, you know, in a small place. I was president of the Girls Association and the Associated Women Students and that kind of thing, and clubs that was my interest mainly.
Okay.
And it was also really my husband's interest, who, you know, we later met. And we were both interested in government.
Where did you meet your husband?
Well, when I was a freshman. Why do I remember these things?
Isn't it nice?
I don't understand it. We lived in the dorm, Waldo Hall. And down at the bottom of the street was an ice cream soda fountain. And, of course, we all gathered there after dinner. And as I heard it later, as a freshman, the girls were all together. And my husband passed by, and he asked his friend who that was. And that was a year. And I guess it was me. And a year went by before I moved into the sorority house, which I was amazed that my family could afford, because that was a little bit, $30 a month, as I remember, room and board. And so he called one time, and I answered the phone, and he wanted to take me someplace. I didn't know who he was or anything. And when I came out of the telephone booth, I don't know, you don't know how to hear all this stuff. when I came out of the telephone booth, the girl said, Who was that? And I told them it was Bob Rikers. And they said, oh, he'll never call again. And I said, who is this? So we looked it up in the book. And he wasn't bad. I said, oh, okay. So when he called again, I could go. Or it was his, it was the nickel hop, which is what sororities and houses had. They had a nickel hop. It was 5 cents a dance, and everybody went to all the different houses, paid a nickel to dance, and I was at the table collecting money, of course. When he came in, and I can remember, he had a maroon sweater and a tie, and not bad.
Quite handsome.
Well, so we danced, and then it was raining, and he said, would you go for a Coke with me? Well, the Coke happened to be downtown, and we were at the college. So it being night, and the dance was over at 9, I think, something like that. And we walked to town, and we had a nickel Coke. It's about this big, I think, someplace. I have a glued together nickel glass that is how big it was. I kept it for so long, and then I broke it, and I pasted it all together so I could remember it. And we had the nickel Coke. That cost him a dime. And then we had to walk home. And I had a new coat, and it was that beige fabric. It was kind of new. I'll think of the name in a minute.
Camel hair.
And we were soaked. And I caught a cold. I don't know. I said, oh. Anyway, that was our first date.
And we got rained on.
Yeah. So, but then we went together in college, and I took his fraternity pin finally, but not till my last year. And then that was my last year, was his junior year, his senior year. Uh-huh. But they called him away from school because he and Bob Root, you know Betty Root here?
Yes.
Her husband were classmates. Bob Root and Bob Rikers were classmates in the first college class to teach frozen foods. They just had discovered that down in Antarctica, they could find food that had been frozen for 10 years and it was still good. So that started the food industry, the frozen food industry here. Mm-hmm. And the two Bobs were in the class. Bob Root was a class ahead, and my husband. And so as their senior year came, the first crops were coming out. And Bob Root had graduated, but they took my husband out and sent him to Bainbridge Island in off of Seattle to study peas and strawberries, which were the first two frozen products they sold.
Hi.
And you were just little kids.
Yes.
But these were in tubs about this big in grocery stores where these two products were frozen, and that's how they sold them.
And interesting.
That was in 40,
uh-huh.
Before the war.
Okay. Now, you mentioned something about Yosemite, that you lived there.
Oh, yes.
And about your children. Tell me about that.
Oh, gosh. Well, oh, dear, a lot went in between there. Bob was called into service, wanted to be a fly boy, you know. He was in, he had a commission when he graduated from college, but he tried to join the Army and they wouldn't take him because he had hay fever. So he went across the street to the Navy and enlisted in the Navy and didn't tell him that he had hay fever. So he became a naval aviator. And that was the last I saw of him, was when he graduated. He was there one day for graduation from college, and that was before he enlisted in the Navy. And so we didn't see each other after that. And he went into the Navy, and I spent a year after that and graduated from college. And became a teacher in Ashland in home economics. And he became in the Navy, and he flew the same type of plane that President Bush flew, uh-huh. in a torpedo bomber off of a carrier. And I have a picture there that we found this President Bush in this plane. It was a cartoon when we were in Phoenix one time, a long time later. And it just so happens that the picture of Bob, my husband, at that time, in the same headgear, in the same plane, and I'll show it to you if you want to see it. And so I saw that in Arizona when we were there, and I said, you know, I can put Bob's head where President Bush's head is, and it'll work. And so there it is. And so I have a picture of him in President Bush's plane. But that's a long, long time between Yosemite and
yes.
college.
Yes.
Because they were short on stewardesses. He's in the Navy for 4 years went by. And I'm teaching school when they took the nurses into the service from the airlines. There were just a few, not many stewardesses, but they took them into the service. So they advertised for people to join the airlines. Well, you had to be 5'5", and not 5'5 and a half. You had to weigh 119 or less. You had to, and I just happened to fit it. So I said, that's what I needed, because I don't think I was a very good teacher. I really don't.
So you became a stewardess?
So through these, this was exciting then, because there weren't, this was all going on at the same time. War was declared. The world is changing. Pandemonium was every place. It's hard to believe. When we were teaching, we acquired a dog. We acquired several bicycles and any number of paraphernalia the fellows couldn't take with them to San Francisco to enlist. It's hard to believe.
Okay.
It's not a world we know of today, because everybody wanted to be in the service. And I wanted to be, and as close, the airlines carried troops at that time, so that was good.
Yeah.
And
But how did you land it in Yosemite?
Oh, gosh. Oh, so much time goes by. Oh, I can't. I'll try to skip. Let's see. I was in the airlines. Bob was in the Navy for 4 years. Didn't see each other, nothing. And I met several people, and, you know, it was no problem getting friends and when you worked for the airlines. This was, and everybody, this is not true. All the men felt that they were going to be gone a year, 2 years. They wanted to leave someone home. And this was almost to the person that you got to know. They knew they were going overseas. They knew they might not come back. They knew that and we lost a lot of friends. And so most of them wanted to leave somebody. So they became engaged. They gave rings. You know, just sort of, it was pandemonium. It was hard to believe. And they wanted to leave somebody home when they left.
Mm-hmm.
And almost to the person that we knew, they went overseas. But now, as far as skipping, 4 years went by. Let's see. How can I skip through those 4 years? Anyway, finally, Bob had been gone 4 years, and they let his flight crew come home because they were assigned to go. It was a long-range plan. There was a plan of flying over Tokyo in a year. I don't know how well this was known, but anyway. And this particular group he was on, were chosen, and they were sent over here to Fort Lauderdale to train for that mission. And meantime, Bob called when I was in Hollywood at the Knickerbocker Hotel, and he says, "I'm home, and I'm coming up there." Well, this was insane. He took a plane, a Navy plane he'd never flown, and at the time he left, the seaport was not closed off. Well, during the war, it was all black. Everything was black, so you couldn't see anything from the coast to the coast. And so he got in this plane, headed for Hollywood. I don't know what he was thinking. And any time he'd start to come to land, to try to get to Hollywood, the searchlights would come on because of the Japanese, you know,
sure,
invasions, what they thought might happen. And so he was just about to ditch into the ocean when, this is the only thing I know about this story, when he saw the idea, if a plane was to land, two lights went up, tick, tick, like this. And that meant that's where that plane landed. And he followed those two lights in, and lucky, I don't know how he lucked out, but he landed, and he was in Long Beach. And he made his way to Hollywood, I do not know. By the time he got there, he had a stomachache, and we were on Sunset Boulevard at 2 a.m. in the morning looking for a glass of milk because he didn't feel too good. And that night, don't ask me why, we decided to get married. And there was no doubt. And I had committed to somebody else, and but I knew inside of me, I knew that I couldn't do that. So that was all decided in that one night. And I had to leave at 7 in the morning. And at that time, the limousines picked us up. They don't do that anymore. And took us to the airport. And I said goodbye. And the next day, we were both in Portland. And that was on a Tuesday. We were married Saturday. I've made 3 flights to Los Angeles in between, landed at midnight, and we're married the next morning.
tell me about your daughters. I believe you have a son also.
Yes. I need to get us to Yosemite.
Okay.
And that, I'll go fast.
We only have a short time.
Uh-oh.
We have about 8 more minutes.
Oh, gee.
Yeah.
Well, okay. We came out of the service. Bob said, he was injured and was in the hospital almost a year. Oh. And came out crippled, injured, and decided he wanted to be a doctor. He'd spent a year in the hospital. And by this time, we had 2 children, and I said, well, okay. So for 8 years, we went to college. We went back to medical school and training and lived in Sacramento long enough to know we didn't want to be there. And we were looking for a place to be when an ad came up in the paper, Yosemite National Park wants a doctor. They had a hospital during the war for rehabilitation for the service men. And so we had a little Studebaker, and bland all the 4 kids by that time, and got it in the car. And I can just see those little kids. They looked, we didn't know what a national park was. And I thought it was just tents. And the kids would see all these children riding bikes through the trees and so forth. It was heaven. And so we said, well, why not? They needed a doctor, the hospital was there, and the whole thing was ready. And there was another older doctor there from who was left after the war. And so there we went. And it was 6 years of wonderful.
Yes. I know you
it's a beautiful spot, and
yes.
that's how we got there. And but no school that we would accept. I mean, the private schools were starting, and the drug and things like that were going. So that's when we moved to Medford. Ah. So that's how we got here.
Okay. Now that your daughter's name and your son's name.
My first son is Robert.
Uh-huh.
And he passed away a few years ago of pancreatic cancer, but they also smoked. I knew that was it. He and his wife both. And daughter Peggy, born a year later, and Sally, who lives here, is a nurse. Susie is a horsewoman,
yes,
and also works in a hospital. Is married to a man in Germany now.
Pardon?
He's in Germany now.
Yeah, but she lives in California.
She's in California,
yeah,
works at a hospital.
Utah.
And he just got back from Saudi Arabia, so that's why they were separated. Sue's the last one. Bill is wonderful.
Yes.
He's in Los Angeles, has two children.
Uh-huh.
And that's about it.
What are your happiest...
And here I am.
Your happiest moment
see.
In your life.
Oh, yes.
What were the happiest moments in
your
life?
I should have made that longer and the other shorter.
No, that's okay. But what are the happiest moments in your life?
Oh, I think living in Yosemite in such a beautiful spot. And our family was all together. And I think that was truly it. And it's what we all remember. We skied, we hiked, we did all these things. And we've hiked since. And that brings back memories.
Yes.
My last hike was when I was 90, and the kids all went. And we made it. We made it back.
At your age of 90, you did go to Yosemite?
Yeah, we went back to Yosemite.
Marvelous.
And that was a good, memorable hike. There's still one place I want to go, but I won't get there.
I know.
And that's heaven. That's
yes.
Vogelsang. Don't forget the name, Vogelsang. It's a high country.
Hanging
Basket Lake,
yes.
Is in Vogelsang, yes. That's my very favorite. That's heaven.
Yeah. Is there anything that you would like to mention us?
Why don't you take a bunch of that out?
No, we cannot take anything out. It's beautiful. Is there anything that you would like to mention to your children?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. And to everybody. When we first moved here, I mean, when I first moved here, I was alone. In my mailbox was a crumpled old piece of paper. And it's just a little mailbox. And on this paper it's there in the frame there. And it says, live, love, and laugh. And somehow that's kind of been, because I had lost Bob by then, and it fits. So I think that I had a whole bunch of them made for my friends last year. My daughter framed them. But if I think of something, I think live, love, and laugh.
And that's very good advice,
huh?
Isn't it? And it's beautiful. Yes.
Well, it includes everything.
Yes.
And if you can laugh about it, I think that helps.
Yes.
Especially now.
Definitely.
No, any other heavy questions?
No. You did it. You did, too. And we didn't even have to ask many questions.
Well, I don't know about that. I probably left a lot.
You've had a fascinating
good stuff
life.
Out.
What year were you born?
1919.
So next year you will become a centurion.
Yes, and 100 years old.
Right.
Next year.
You will be 100 years old.
No, 99.
Give me another year.
Well, this is 19, this is 2018,
yeah, yeah.
So next year you'll be...
Next year it's 19, September.
September.
But I won't make it, and I don't care if I don't. Somebody should have my heart.